Welcome to County Edition on 1590 KVGB, 95.5 FM, the talk of the town. As we talk with Barton County Sheriff Brian Ballandier today. Concealed carry classes, I was going to talk to you about them, but they're full. That's good.
Yep, it is. The first one of the year, we usually wind up, it's usually pretty full. I think everybody gets a new gun for Christmas or something.
Okay. And
decide they're going to go take the CCW class. So, but yeah, we're full up, and we'll have another one probably midsummer, and we'll definitely have one in the fall. So you still have an opportunity sometime this year.
And it's a great idea.
It's
responsible gun ownership, really.
It really is. Kansas is a constitutional carry state. When they first passed that, the constitutional carry in Kansas, you know, there was a lot of cops that were, is this a good idea? But it wound up, you know, we have not had any more problems than what we did before. And I think it's probably, you know, now that everybody is accustomed to it, as far as my law enforcement opinion is concerned, I have no issues with it. I think it's a pretty good idea, and I think it's constitutionally supported. I think it's a right that Kansas citizens have, and I think it's a good deal. Like I say, you know, everybody was a little bit concerned initially, but it wound up not being a big deal. But that said, you know, in Kansas, most people have some firearms experience, or, you know, you grow up in these rural areas. But it's still a good idea to take the concealed carry class for safety, if no other reason. And then also we go into the liability side of it, when you can use deadly force and when you cannot. And
you'd be surprised when you can't.
That's exactly right. You know, even though Kansas has a no retreat, stand your ground law, you still have to be careful about when you use deadly force, because it's going to be a bad deal. No matter, even if you're 100% justified, there's still going to be a hassle. Because, you know, it has to be investigated to make sure that it was a righteous shoot. And, you know, we've had a couple of them here in the county that were lawful, justifiable shootings that I've been involved in. And it is what it is, but we still have to investigate that and make sure that it is a good shoot, just like when an officer has to use deadly force.
Okay, Brian. You deal with different things every day, and we talk about some on the show, you know. In fact, those are some of our best shows, right? So I don't know how long ago it was. Had a gentleman who came into the sheriff's office with an air gun?
Yeah, it looked like turned an out AR, to be an air
yeah,
rifle.
Yeah. But those things that happen at the sheriff's office.
Yeah, that was a little bit different story, because I think there was some ill will towards the sheriff's office at that point. But you'd be amazed at the stuff that we deal with that either walks in the front door, or somebody says, hey, you know, grandpa died, can you come out here and look at this? I've seen hand grenades. I've seen ammunition, radioactive material, blasting caps, explosives. You name it, it comes wandering at firearms. It comes wandering in the front door. The latest, and I don't know what the story is on this. Maybe there's somebody that's got some historical information on this. The latest thing in the last couple of years, we found 3 or 4 75 millimeter recoilless rocket or recoilless rifle rounds, cannon rounds. These are that 70, I think it's either 70 or 75 millimeter, but I think it's 75 millimeter recoilless rifle. It's an artillery piece, basically, and they came out at the very, very end of World War II, and were used extensively in Korea. I think they used them for quite a while. As a matter of fact, I think that's what Colorado and the mountain areas use when they fire artillery around to break up snowdrifts. They use a surplus. But we're finding these spent.
So these have been fired.
They've been fired, and we don't know where they're coming from. We had a couple of them come from the Cheyenne Bottoms. We had a couple found out here west of town. You know, the first one, you can look at those rounds and you can see where there's rifling grooves. There's a what they call a cannula or a cannula ring on that shell, and you can see where that has been fired out of the cannon. And then you wonder, well, I wonder if this is full of explosives. So it turns out that all of them we found were full of cement. They were practice rounds. So we do not know. And as far as we can tell, when it was the Army Air Base out here during World War II, they did not have those. The air base stayed open for a period of time or was inactive after World War II. And at one point there was an Air National Guard unit out there. We don't know if maybe a National Guard unit was out there and fired some rounds off and now they're turning up, or if they, we don't know. We still see live ammunition coming in from Cheyenne Bottoms. Mostly what we're seeing now is 50 caliber, machine gun rounds, Browning machine gun rounds. Years and years ago, I'd heard a story. I had a neighbor that lived across the street from me, and he was from Oklahoma. And he was a World War II vet, and he got wound up stationed, well, or came to Great Bend, was trained here, and then wound up going to Europe. And then after the war, he had met a local woman, and they, you know, moved back to Great Bend. But I asked him, this was in the 90s, and the fellow's long since gone, but matter of fact, I had my history teacher live to the south of me, and then this guy lived across the street from me. So there were some long discussions in the alley some nights. But I asked him, so why are we finding all this live ammunition out there? Because it was a bombing range. The Bottoms was used as a bombing range and a target range. And they had, it's my understanding, they had billboard-sized targets set up there, and they'd come in and make strafing runs on those, and they'd rip off, you know, so many belts of 50 caliber ammunition. He said, oh, that's simple. He said, we would go out, you know, they'd train you how to fire those guns, and then you had to make so many sorties, go out and practice runs. He said, we'd go out and we'd fire about a third of a belt, and then we'd just take all the rest of it and throw it out the window. Well, why? And he said, well, because those guns are hard to clean, and they're much easier to clean if you only fired off about 30, 40 rounds out of them. And he said, then you just go back, you know, the air base and run a swab through them, and yeah, it's clean, looks good, go on. And I thought, yeah, well, that's a nice story. And it, you know, it kind of made sense. But I don't know, it's been several months ago, well, a couple of months ago, we had a whole box of 50 cal come in the office from the Bottoms. That guy did metal detecting, and you know, he'd go out there and look around for stuff, and he's pulling out all these live 50 caliber rounds. And I'm looking at them. I just happen to glance down that box, and they're corroded and nasty. And but I look at one of them, and it looks a little bit different around the neck. So I picked it out of there. Sure as heck, the link for the belt was still on that. And that's the only one I've ever seen that still had a link, was still on that shell, which means it had to come out of an airplane when it was still in a belt of machine gun ammunition. So, you know, 30, 40 years later, I was able to confirm John's story. They just tossed them overboard. They didn't want to clean the guns.
What else gets dragged in there?
Oh, I've had mercury come in, liquid mercury. I've had blasting caps walk in the front door. Blasting caps are not quite as common as it used to be. Back in the day, these seismic crews, now they use a truck that's got a huge weight on the back of it, and they thump the ground with it to you right. know, take readings. But way back in the day, they would set small charges, and they had to prime those with blasting caps, and they'd set them all off, and then they'd take their readings, and the they'd fall off the back of trucks. I mean, literally, people say, oh, I found these laying on US 281, and they come walking in the front door and have 25 blasting caps in a box. I think it was last summer I got called over. It was here in town. And that's the thing. When people don't know who to call, they call the sheriff for some reason. The guy calls me up and says, yeah, dad passed away. We're not sure what this stuff is. Can you come over and look at it? Okay. So I go over there and look. Yeah, it's blasting caps and det cord. He had detonation cord in a Budweiser water cooler up in the attic. And we got it down and took him out the range and popped him.
So blasting caps, I mean, what are those? I mean,
blasting cap is usually the ones we see around here are a cap that is electrically fired, and it is inserted either into a booster charge or into an explosive charge to set off the main explosive. A blasting cap going off sounds about like an M80. There are several different sizes of blasting cap, but what it does, it sets up the initial shock to set off the explosive.
Okay, yeah.
And sometimes they will use a booster charge with the cap and then fire the explosive with the booster charge and the cap, or they'll fire it with the blasting cap. And we've had binary explosives come in the front door, commercial explosives.
Is that something good you got to throw in your trunk to take down to the sheriff's office? Or
they do.
Okay.
You know, I haven't had it come in the front door for a while, but, you know, we will pick up explosives. There's only been one or two times that it got real sketchy. Many years ago, I'm going to say this is the late 80s, early 90s, we had a guy called us up and said, hey, I think I might have a problem. And we went out to a farm south of town. And in this, in the 70s, 60s and 70s, you could just go in and sign for dynamite. You could just go in and you need to blow out tree stumps. There used to be a company in town here called Kansas Seismic Supply. And you just go in there and you buy dynamite. Or I think the other one was Kennepac. It was a two-part explosive. But anyhow, they called us down there and we went in and took a look. And there's a fuel tank that goes in the back of a pickup, you know, one of those flat ones. It's sitting there on top of that fuel tank. There is a piece of plywood and probably 3/4 of a case of dynamite. And the dynamite, this was old clay, the type of explosive that had the clay with the nitroglycerin in it. And you've got to rotate those sticks every so often. And what had happened is it had sat there so long that the nitroglycerin had oozed out of it and was all down the front of this tank, and it had formed
a fuel tank.
A fuel tank. And then it had formed crystals, and they call that rotten dynamite. And those crystals, if you, and I've been to several explosives of schools, you don't want to introduce any shock, friction, heat, anything like that. But if you break some of those crystals or handle them incorrectly, that can set off the nitroglycerin. Nitroglycerin is a whole different animal from my understanding. And that one we called ATF out of Wichita. And they came up, and it was kind of an interesting process, but they were able to treat it and dissolve those crystals. And we loaded it up in the back of a county sand truck and drove it out in the middle of a field and set it off. They put another charge with it and set it off.
Did it make a big boom?
Oh yeah. Yeah. They, you know, they got a high order explosion out of it, and that's what they want, is to make everything disappear. But they put quite a bit, and I don't remember what they used, whether, I don't think it was dynamite, but I think it was a binary explosive. And they put that with the case of rotten dynamite, and just made it all disappear. Had one 2-3 years ago. Guy had a casing service, and evidently they would lower an explosive down. He had a casing pulling service,
right?
And you know, they'd recover that casing out of the hole, and evidently in some cases they had to lower it down the hole, an explosive charge down the hole. And they'd set it off and cut that casing off, and then they could pull it. Well, the guy had passed away, you know, 20 years before, and his wife was getting older, and she called, and we went out there and took a look, and the same thing, we had a whole lot of det cord, had a whole lot of blasting caps. I don't think we had any dynamite on that one, but the oil field back in the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s, there was actually quite a bit of explosive floating around out here. So, you know, it's one of those things that you got to be prepared to deal with. And if it's I've been to several explosives or bomb training schools. I went down to Socorro, New Mexico. It was a real interesting school. Went down there, I think it was 2 weeks, and went through that training down there. I've been to several ATF schools. One of them is one of the ATF bomb schools that I went through. Is they teach you how to recover evidence after a bombing, and they would build a bomb before we got there, and they would set it off inside of one of those bomb container trucks. They'd set it off, and then they'd go in there and scoop all that stuff together, all the pieces and parts and dust and paper, and they'd put it in a paper bag, and then they'd give it to you and say, okay, figure out what kind of bomb this was, how it was used, and what the triggering mechanism was. And you'd sit there, you and two or three other guys, and pick through that stuff with tweezers and look for stuff with numbers on it. And then you'd be surprised what you can find. Now, in that case, those, you know, that's all enclosed, so it's pretty easy to find that stuff. But down at Socorro, they taught us, we blew up a Ford Taurus, and we went down and picked through the blast seat to see what we could find, you know, any evidence. And that was pretty impressive. I mean, they set off like 300 pounds of ANFO in a Ford Taurus. Yeah, so, but yeah, and then we've had radioactive stuff come float or problems. You know, way back in 1985, 1986, I was trained to use radiation detectors, Geiger counters, and that's one of those things, you know, well, yeah, probably not going to use this a whole lot. But I've had to pull them out twice since I've been in law enforcement. One of them was just here a couple of years ago. We had somebody ran over. They use a radioactive isotope to somehow they put it on the highway, and they measure the thickness of the asphalt when they've been it's part of an instrument. And they were repaving K-156, and state guy or somebody, who contractor, whoever it was out there, had his isotope out on the highway, was trying to measure the thickness of that asphalt. Somebody come along, run over it, and it stuck under the car and disappeared. So we spent several hours out here driving around trying to find this thing, and we found it. It got knocked off. It stayed under the car, oh, probably about 4 miles. We found it over here by Fort Zara. It got knocked off and was over in the ditch. And I had the Geiger counters, and we checked it, and said, yep, that's it. That's what it is. And but yeah, I keep a couple of Geiger counters here at the office, and that's what we keep them for mostly. Was back in the day, a lot of the oil field companies, it's my understanding, when they did the logging, the downhole wire line stuff, mm-hmm. they would use a radioactive source. And we always kept Geiger counters and radiation detectors around in case we'd have a truck wreck that involved any of those things. And we'd have to check, see if we had radioactive material that was loose on the highway. You know, yeah, it you just never know what you're going to run into from day to day.
Any UFO reports ever?
Not recently. When I was a young cop, you used to get a lot of them. Cell phones and the internet have quieted a lot of our UFO stuff. You still see, you know, what's that bright light in the sky? I guess there's that string of satellites, you know, mm-hmm. people see those, not know what they are. And I've gone out and looked at those at night, and yeah, it's pretty interesting. But usually now, if somebody sees something, they'll put it online on Facebook or whatever, and somebody will be able to explain it pretty quick. So, but no, we've not had UFO sightings or reports for a while. I think we've had 3 human skulls either come in the door, or I think one of them came in the door, and 2 of them we went out and located, or somebody found.
Where did you come in? Hey, I found this over here.
Found this out in the field, or found this in the river, and all of those have turned out to be Native American. And what we do with those is we still notify the coroner, and you can usually tell by the weathering, you know, how old, or you have a suspicion what it mm-hmm. is. And then we will send them, I think it's KU, to the anthropology department. And they will identify them, and then they will turn them over to one of the state Indian tribes for proper burial. But, you know, I mean, those people inhabited the Great Plains out here for hundreds and hundreds of years. And occasionally one turns up. It's just unusual stuff that shows up.
Brian Ballandier with us here. And for just a couple more minutes here, things that come in the front door of the Barton County Sheriff's Office. This is one that you've got, like you said, you got to be ready for anything.
Yep.
We have livestock trucks that tip over now and then.
Oh, God.
And they're out there herding pigs, right?
I have.
If you've herded pigs.
I've herded cattle. I've had sheep, goats, you name it. I've had horses running down the, you know, running down 10th Street. that's the other thing, you know, because you're the sheriff, they expect, well, and statutorily, I've got to deal with some of that livestock stuff. And, you know, somebody's got to deal with these truck wrecks. And the last two or three bad problems I've had were pigs. They were feeder pigs that, you know, were going from one facility to another. And invariably, it's somebody trying to make a corner and they go too fast. And you have not heard a noise until you hear a truckload of pigs fall over. The squealing is deafening. And, you know, and there's no way to set that truck back up with those pigs in there. So you have to, we get the fire department out there and I've got a couple of people that I can call, say, hey, I need portable panels. And, or, you know, if it's cattle, I say, I need, you know, three guys on horses and I need portable panels. But what we'll do on those pig wrecks is we'll set up the panels, you know, and typically the truck will be on its side, the trailer. We'll have the fire department cut the roof off of it and start letting pigs out. And, you know, some of them have to be destroyed.
Some of those are out when you get there, though.
Oh, right? Yeah. I've had it turned over and we're chasing. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, there's pigs that have got loose from those wrecks and we never found them. Truck fell over and split the top open. They started running and just kept going.
Okay, and then there's the one. Then you've got to work for pig poachers because while the pigs are dead out there, there's kind of people kind of watching and trying to sneak up and grab a hog.
I don't want to go down too deep that road, but you know, we had to destroy quite a few hogs on one of those, and I called for a rendering truck, and I expended 20 or 30 rounds of ammunition. And I think the rendering guy only got four pigs. So I don't know what happened between. I don't ask, you know.
That's why people have scanners, man. We can go get half a hog for coming up.
A whole hog.
Brian, enjoy it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next month, okay?
All right, I'll be here.
Barton County Sheriff Brian Ballandier. Things that come in the front door of the Barton County Sheriff's Office and beyond. Here on County Edition on KBGB.